You're listening to Proven Perspectives, a podcast with John Hawkins, the founder of Leadership Edge Incorporated. I'm Laura, John's daughter, and in each episode, we will explore a topic related to life, leadership, or mentoring. Through nearly 50 years of faith in Christ, John has learned proven life and leadership perspectives that will equip listeners for a lifestyle of leadership in their marriages, families, careers, communities, and churches. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Laura. It's great to talk to you this afternoon.
I know. Good to talk to you, too. How's your day going?
It is going well. I was thinking last week I could write a book on how to spend your 60s on Zoom, because I feel like I spend so many of my days on Zoom, but I've just been on one Zoom meeting today, so that's been good, and it was a great one with a dear friend in Dallas, so it's been a good day so far.
Well, good. Well, guess where I was this morning?
For some reason, Trader Joe's comes to mind, but I have no idea why. But where were you
this morning?
That's
a good guess. But actually, I was at the doctor's office, and it reminded me of how eternally in debt I am to you and Mom, because I had to take one of my kids to get shots, and she actually really took it like a champ. But it reminded me of a little girl who did not in any way, shape, or form take it like a champ. And in fact, I'm pretty sure I remember and have heard stories of Mom dragging me down the halls while I screamed and held on to the wall jams, right?
Well, and I remember one time you actually climbed under the examination table. And we had to drag you. I mean, forever, Dr. Murphy and Bonnie, his nurse, are going to be inscribed in my mind because of just quite an experience that was.
Right. The worst case scenario of giving shots, basically. Anyways, so yeah, I was thinking of you guys, and we're recording this just before Mother's Day, so maybe I should write that into Mom's Mother's Day card for this weekend.
Thank you, Mom. the little one that you just referenced, tell her I appreciate her courage today.
Okay. I will. She'll appreciate that. So anyways, okay. Well, so today for our podcast, I'm excited. You let me pick the podcast topic. Yeah. So we've talked about it's being a peacemaker in 2021. And so here's the premise of what I want to ask you about, talk to you about. Basically, it's really hard, at least at different points, to be a peacemaker in 2021. Like, I feel like there have always been some particular landmine issues in culture, like, you know, politics and our faith. Like, you hear people talk about, like, don't talk about that at the holidays, you know. Yeah. And I think there are certain subjects that we know to talk carefully and thoughtfully about, at least with certain people, to kind of avoid some of those landmines that could do serious damage to our relationships. But suddenly, it feels like those landmines are just everywhere. You know, it's politics and faith and vaccinations and sexuality and what do we understand and believe about history and what needs to happen for there to be racial reconciliation. You know, I mean, those are just a few. And so I remember calling you last fall when I was really surprised by conversations that I'd had with a Christian friend who I think highly of, who's influenced me and my family deeply. And yet over the last year, it's become clear that even though we both really love God, we see a lot of things really differently to the point that it's almost like we don't even seem to agree on some basic facts. Mm-hmm. And so I remember that as I was talking to you, I said something like, you know, I feel like even if I spent all day every day reading the news, I still wouldn't be able to keep up with all these facts and theories that are influencing culture. And I was just kind of telling you, like, I felt disoriented by that this friend and I could agree on so much and yet her have these viewpoints that I don't even understand. And you said something like, I think this is almost verbatim, but that you don't ever remember a time in your lifetime that, you know, quote unquote, good people have had such a hard time getting along with each other. So I guess my first question is, why? Like, why is it so hard to get along right now?
Well, since you sent me these prompts, I've been pondering that. And I've been thinking, you know, why is it? And what is it about the culture? And you know, I would even add some to what you just shared, some of the examples. Like I recently in the course of 1 week, was in conversation with two older godly men, you know, older than mm-hmm. myself.
Yeah.
And both of them are in the early stages of leaving the church that they're a part of.
Well,
because of just differences that they can't come to terms with related to their church. And again, these are men who have sacrificed dearly for their church. They are not what you'd call critics or consumers,
mm-hmm.
but they're leaving their church, you know. And then I also, you know, right now know of a good handful of churches that are just in such trouble internally with members in dissent with each other, and a lot of accusations and just a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it just does seem like it is such a hard time for good people, and I would say Christian people,
yeah,
to know how to live in peace with each other. So, you know, as I was thinking about it this morning, I was thinking, well, you know, where does your mind go? And of course, being an old geezer, I always look back to the glory days when everything was perfect. But I was especially thinking about what was life like before the internet and before just the endless amount of data that comes into the internet and the polarization and polarity that internet news and internet social media has brought. So, you know, I think that certainly we are reaping some of the really bad effects of the just constant barrage of data, and especially data from particular viewpoints. You know, I was thinking this morning, you know, when I was growing up, there were three news channels. There was ABC, there was CBS, and there was NBC.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, their news was pretty much the same. They reported the same stories the same way every night. And that's all. You had that and newspapers. And newspapers were pretty similar. They tended to report the same thing the same ways, though some, you know, had better staff than others. And so it was a little bit more of a monolithic way to know what was going on. And certainly there were weaknesses. Certainly there were weaknesses. And even then, there was dissent and lack of peace in the culture. But it was just a different day. So one way I went as I was thinking about this is just the whole thing of the internet and endless data and media and the change that I've seen in my lifetime. So I think that's one thing. I think another thing that's as old as mankind is we just have expectations, and we expect that things are going to go this way. We expect that this person's going to think this way.
Yeah.
We expect that nothing's going to change or that everything's going to change. So we get in our mind expectations, and then those aren't met, and that can certainly undermine our peace and our peace in relationships with others. But I think another thing that I would say is true of this age is it's just kind of an emotional fragility, a lack of ability to deal with dissonance.
Yeah.
To deal with difficult conversations, to accept differences. I think that, you know, you hear the word trigger or being triggered, and especially on the college campus, there's been a whole change in the wording of things and the teaching of things because of the different groups on campus that certain ways trigger them.
Yeah.
And so I think we've become a people, say in the U.S., that have very little emotional resilience and emotional steadfastness amid differences of opinion. So that's the first place that my mind went, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about this later in this podcast, but then my mind also goes to, there's no place in the world that's really pushing peace other than Christ. Meaning we're pushing tolerance, we're pushing rights, we're pushing retribution, you know, we're pushing lots of different things, but it's hard to ever hear, you know, on the audio news or read on the internet, anybody that's really advocating for just peace between people. And so it's almost like the idea of peace is really a non-category and almost is viewed as suspect that, well, if you're pushing for peace, you're not really dealing with the difficulties and the offenses that have happened, because it's just too much for there to really be peace. So, Laura, I've kind of ambled on there, but those are just some thoughts that came to my mind as I was thinking about your question about why does it seem to be so hard right now?
Yeah, no, that's really good. Well, and so, okay, my recap of what you said is that some of the reasons are like technology and then the way that's influenced like reporting and, you know, news coverage and like all of those things. And then expectations, which I hadn't, yeah, that's an interesting one. And then emotional fragility. And then I love how you like kind of contrasted that with, and then there's Christ, you know, who like whose approach is different from, yeah, all of these things that we're seeing in our culture, but like you said, yeah, like the world at large. So that's actually, yeah, that's really interesting. So, I mean, with Christ as like the ultimate example, I guess, what does it look like to be a peacemaker right now? Like, are there any Bible passages that guide you as you relate with people who see things differently than you?
Well, you know, what does it look like? Well, I know that easy answer, but it's also the right answer, is it looks like Christ. It looks like what Christ did, and that doesn't mean that there wasn't, you know, tough stuff. You know, Christ threw everyone out of the temple.
Yeah.
So, and he is the Lion of Judah, you know. He is a fierce person in some ways. But he was always about peace. And again, we have to understand that biblically. It wasn't a fake peace. It wasn't a, well, let's act like that didn't happen and try to choose peace. It was peace that was right in amid reality, and yet was one that only he could broker. And in terms of scripture passages, as I was thinking about this, I think there are four that came to mind. One was Romans 12:18, where it says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Now that is flat out remarkable. You know, if possible, so it's allowing the fact there may be a time or two that it's not possible to be at peace with others.
Yeah.
But if it is possible, so far as it depends on you, and that suggest, and the other person may not reciprocate.
Yeah.
But as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. And it's like, wow, I mean, what, how do you say that any clearer? You know? And then Romans 14:19, so then let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. So again, there's this determination. There's this, let's pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. And then 2 Corinthians 13:11, finally, brothers, rejoice, aim for restoration, comfort one another, agree with one another, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you. And then finally, and this is probably the best of them all because it speaks most of Christ, Ephesians 2:14 to 17. For he himself, that's Christ, he himself is our peace, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility. I think he's talking specifically here about the hostility between Jews and Greeks.
Hmm.
But by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. And he came and preached peace to you who were far off, and peace to those who were near. So in some ways, Laura, that suggests that the thing that Christ has won for us is peace.
Hmm.
And so if we're not living in peace, then we have reason to believe we're not living in Christ. Because it is Christ that, what Christ established for us was peace. He's broken down the division. So, you know, to think about that practically, say like in my marriage to your wonderful mom,
yes.
You know, sometimes I will have in my mind just picky, petty thoughts towards Janet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not about anything really important. They're certainly not about any sins in her life. It's just kind of a critical nature that I may have at times in my heart and mind. And,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes Janet doesn't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I have to own is if I'm allowing those thoughts to just go on in my mind, I'm choosing to not live in Christ. Because what Christ has bought for me in my relationship with Janet and with anyone else is as far as it's possible on my side to live in peace. And so I must keep stepping towards that peace.
Hmm. And so when you say that he bought us peace, like, I guess, how? Is it he bought it because now we have this huge commonality that's greater than our differences, or because of what he did for us on the cross, like, that is the impetus for, like, peace? Or, like, I guess, what exactly does that mean?
Well, it says there that he might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility, and he came and preached peace to us. And again, it says earlier, he has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what that's saying is any division that we allow to come between us is not a part of the work of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what Christ has brought is peace. Now, again, I do want to speak clearly. If there is a clear doctrinal difference,
mm-hmm.
then that needs to be said. You know, mm-hmm. if it's heresy, it needs to be called heresy.
Mm-hmm.
If it is about sin, it needs to be called sin. But for us to live in a broken relationship with each other,
mm-hmm.
that is not of the Lord. And we can't fix it. It really takes the Holy Spirit and both people, in
yes.
a sense, to fix it. But we can choose by the grace of God to do the best we can to live in peace with them.
Hmm. Man, that's good, Dad. I want to, like, a lot of those, I think almost all of those verses I'm not very familiar with. So I want to go back and look at those. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, you bet.
Well, and one reason I wanted to do a podcast on this is because peacemaking, I think, is really a strength of yours. And I think you are able to form strong relationships and partner with a lot of different kinds of people. And so I wanted to ask you, like, what have you learned about how to be a peacemaker?
Some days it seems like nothing, you know. I think what I've learned is that the reference point of my life is the gospel of Jesus Christ and the amazing mercy that he showed when he saved me over 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that he taught me when I came to him was I had a very broken relationship with my father. Mm-hmm. And he told me that he wanted me to learn to forgive my father, even if my father never changed. Hmm. And it was 7 years after that that my dad died of cancer. Mm-hmm. And I think that I learned that even with people that there is real hurt between, that part of the gospel was that has to be dealt rightly with. Mm-hmm. And again, I couldn't make my dad change, and he really didn't change. Mm-hmm. But I could forgive him, mm-hmm. and by the grace of God. And so I think because that was so associated with right when I came to Christ, it just kind of bore in my mind that, in a sense, who am I to stand in, I don't know, condemnation or judgment over when God so graciously saved me?
Yeah.
And it just seemed like it just didn't fit. But again, I know that, but living that out consistently, you know, when someone's hurt me, when someone's offended me, when someone's made me mad, mm-hmm. you know, it still is definitely a choice. And I think I sent you a quote by David Brainerd. Is it okay if I share that quote?
Yes, please.
Yeah, well, David Brainerd was a very unusual guy. He lived in the early 1700s. He was a man who was known for just being sick a lot. By the time he was in his late teens, he already had tuberculosis, and he would die of that in his late 20s, 29. Hmm. And he was not always a man of peace. He went to Yale University, and back then there was a real division between the faculty and administration on one side and the students on the other side. I think there was a revival of the Lord amongst the students, and they were very zealous about their faith, and that didn't quite happen with the faculty and administration. Hmm. And so, you know, there was a rule that was passed where if students made any public statements against the kind of faith that the faculty or administrators had, they could be thrown out of the university. And so David Brainerd was actually thrown out of the university for saying of one of his teachers that he had no more of the presence of God in him than did a chair. Which Yowzers. Basically meant was not much.
Zing.
So again, he starts out as a guy who's not necessarily a peacemaker.
Yeah.
But he wrote later in his life, he again suffered horribly from health problems. He suffered horribly from depression. Hmm. He was a missionary to the Indian tribes in New England, and would go without food a lot, rode, I think, over 2,000 miles horseback to share the gospel with them. But here's what David Brainerd wrote later on. He says, God has made me willing to do anything that I can do, consistent with truth, for the sake of peace, and that I might not be a stumbling block to others. Hmm. For this reason, I can cheerfully forego and give up what I verily believe, after the most mature and impartial search, is my right in some instances. God has given me that disposition that if this were the case, that a man has done me 100 injuries, and I, though ever so much provoked by him to do it, have done him only one, I feel disposed and heartily willing, humbly, to confess my fault to him, on my knees to ask his forgiveness, though at the same time he should use this to justify himself and all the injuries he has done me, and should only make use of my humble confession to further blacken my character the more and represent me as the only person guilty.
Hmm.
Now, that is a big drink of water. That is a huge statement about having a heart that is so oriented towards, you know, in truth, seeking peace and reconciliation. And again, we do have to figure out, well, you know, how does that work in this situation or that situation, or what are some other scriptural views that also go along with that? But to me, it's a great example of a man whose heart has been turned to be like the heart of Jesus, that calls us to seek peace because of the peace that he has made for us. And he died, David Brainerd, at 29, and yet his life has been a example for Christian missions since then. In fact, Jim Elliot, who you know is one of my favorites, he was a missionary in the, I think, 40s and 50s to the Indians in Ecuador. One of the men whose lives cheered him on most was the life of David Brainerd. So great example here of someone who pursued peace with truth in any way he could.
Yeah, well, and I feel like there's a lot to unpack from that. But one thing that I took from that quote is just, like, that it's wise and God-honoring to start by dealing with our faults before focusing on anyone else's, which I think is countercultural now and probably has always been countercultural, you know. But it reminds me of something that you talked about one time when I was struggling with forgiveness in a relationship. And you talked about the idea of putting people in boxes. Can you that you know what I'm talking about?
You bet. You bet.
Okay, there's can you tell us more?
Yeah, there's a wonderful secular book that talks about this. It's called Leadership and Self-Deception. And it's definitely one I encourage people to read readily. But it basically talks that a lot of times we know something that was right for us to have done for someone, and then we refuse to do it. We refuse to do the right thing for them. And so then, to keep ourselves from feeling bad about ourselves because we didn't do what was right, we put them in the box, is what this model says. And basically, is we vilify them. So all we do is focus on all the things they've done, because if we can just make them bad enough, then we don't have to actually deal with our own fault. And so when we've done that, we're in the box, and we've put them in the box to where there's no way that we can see them other than in a vile way, because if we accepted the fact that maybe they weren't wrong at all, we would have to deal with our own guilt and what we did. And kind of a classic example of this is the wife and the mother and father with the new child, and the baby's crying in the middle of the night. And the husband decides to act like he's still asleep so that the wife will get up and take care of the baby. And so then the wife gets up and takes care of the baby. The husband knows that he should have done it. He didn't. And so then he's going to be really tempted the next day to really be thinking about all of her faults. Because if he can just make her bad enough in his mind, he won't have to deal with the fact that he should have humbled himself and been the servant and gotten up and gotten the baby. So it's easy to do. And again,
totally
great book that has helped me a lot. I was pointed to that book by a dear friend, Gordon Blocker, and it has been a great help to me.
How cool. Yeah, well, ever since you told me about that, you know, like sometimes you hear an idea and all of a sudden you see it everywhere.
Yes.
And I've seen that like so often, that tendency that I have to put people in boxes. And I particularly see it now when I start to feel like suspicious or threatened by other people. Like oftentimes when I feel threatened or angry, it's because some weakness of mine is being exposed. Maybe like, I mean, I think it plays out, and I think I see it in culture a lot right now, too, of, like, you know, hard-heartedness is being exposed, or, you know, like, lack of commitment, you know, like, whatever. There's all of these different things, and so it's like we're so tempted to make the other side the bad guy because, you know, like, how dare you say that I'm not, you know, the, you know. Anyways, so, and yet David Brainerd seems to say that even if, you know, my wrong is far less than the other person's, my first focus in the relationship always needs to be clearing up anything on my end. So I guess my final question is, where's the line on that? And you kind of acknowledged earlier that there is a line. Like, how do you personally decide when to hold your tongue and deal with your own heart without needing to confront other people and their blind spots? And how do you know when true peacemaking requires speaking up in opposition?
Gosh, yeah. I think prayer is a great help with that. Because, again, peacemaking cannot be a general disavowal of reality or truth.
Yeah.
It just can't be. That's not biblical. That doesn't make sense biblically. But it also says that, I think it's love covers a multitude of sins. And so I think we have to know by the Spirit, when is it time to speak up? When is it time to just pray? When is it time to just absorb what's been dished out to you? And take that to the Lord. I have a real fear of confrontation myself. That's just something I don't like. And, you know, God has really worked me over with that. And I think I have some friends who would think, how do you think you have a fear of confrontation? But I think that, in fact, a pastor that I've been a mentor for, he said that John's the kind of guy who can kick you in the gut and it feels so good. And I'm like, when did I ever kick you in the gut? I don't even know what you're talking about. So I guess I'm learning how to be more honest or confrontive. But I think that again, love rules. And if I must speak to my brother about something hard that maybe he doesn't even want to hear about, because I know that would be the way to love him best, then I must do that. And if I do anything other than that, it's just sheer selfishness on my part. And so, again, I think we just have to pray and seek the Lord in that. And remember, as James said, that every man should be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath.
Good. Well, Dad, this has been helpful for me just kind of thinking through some of these things. I think my big takeaway is just to go back and look at those verses and kind of think more deeply about what it actually means that Christ established peace and like how that should impact the way I relate with other people. So thanks for sharing that. Any final thoughts you have?
No, I love this topic because it certainly is descriptive of the time that we live in, and so glad that you picked it for us. I just want to remind our listeners that at Leadership Edge, we're doing all that we can do by the grace of God to raise up God-honoring leaders for now and for the future around what we call the Life Vision Statement, which is by God's grace to step forward as God's man or woman in my spheres of influence to serve His purposes for His glory. If you'd like to learn more about Leadership Edge, you can go to www.lead-edge.com and you'll find everything you need to know about us there. So thanks for listening today.
Great. Thanks, Dad. And thanks, listeners, for joining us.
Listeners, if you would like to find out more about John's thoughts on life, leadership, and mentoring, please go to the Leadership Edge website at www.lead-edge.com. Or if you have questions or ideas of topics for future podcasts, please reach out to us at lai@lead-edge.com. We look forward to hearing from you.